welcome back to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Today is May 31st, 2025, and received a text message during the break that somebody who was working in the Registrar of Voters office in one of our counties here in California was noticing that a lot of people have voted for multiple gubernatorial candidates on one ballot where it clearly says vote for one. So they couldn't make a decision, and they voted for two. Just a hot tip for you in case you haven't filled your ballot out. And obviously, you, unless you're a time traveler, you haven't been to the polls because that happens on Tuesday. If you vote for two, none of them count.
Yeah, they throw it out.
So please stop doing that.
The whole ballot.
Yeah. So don't do that. Terrible idea. So it kind of threw me off track there. Momentito. So we want to know, fellers, we've got the dream team on here. So we have Mike Ariza, Professor Mike Mushape, perhaps, I don't know. Assemblyman Stan Ellis has joined us. Yes, I lured you in with the whole Guinness thing last hour, huh? and our friend Ron Stein. So we're growing. We're growing our expert numbers here. Can you guys, whoever wants to kick it off, but talk about the Defense Production Act and how that comports with states' rights and, private business and all that. I mean, you can't just take the refineries and tell them, here, you have to produce. I'm pretty sure we have constitutional prohibitions against that. How does this all dovetail together and make it so that we don't implode?
Well, take a look at one issue you have to think about. If one of the big refineries does go down, and the fuels can be transportation fuels coming from foreign-based refineries, I don't think our ports have the capability to import that kind of fuel.
No, they don't.
The kind
I think
of volume that we're using. And so it's a catch-22, if you lose a refinery, where are you going to get the fuel? You can get it from foreign countries, but you don't have the capability to bring it in.
Right.
And that's a valid concern, because the Chevron El Segundo, one thing is all these refineries, they're big, but they're old. And what caused the fire at Chevron and El Segundo was they simply missed a thin spot during inspection on a furnace on the Isomax unit, the jet Isomax unit. And those are running 1,500, 2,000 pounds, hydrogen jet, and, 600-700 degrees plus the furnace box. So once it goes off, it starts to open up. It's like an explosion. So you'll hear people, well, there was an explosion. There was some sabotage. No, it's just some of these refineries are old, and things like inspections can get missed. There are so many things that can take a refinery offline. This is within the realm of Realville here. And right now, if we had El Segundo or Richmond go down with the status that we're in, where we don't have tankers coming here from Asia and they haven't been coming here for a few weeks, this state is, my guesstimate, is going to be on its knees.
And the rest of the country with it.
Well, this is Professor Mushape. I don't know if you want to go back to the Defense Production Act some of the primary things. So again, this was passed in 1950. It's been around in various forms before that, but 1950 was the formal introduction and passage of the Defense Production Act. And basically, here's what it does, and maybe this will help a lot of the listeners. It gives the president really broad powers and authorities in matters related to domestic industry and national security. Okay? So it's confined to domestic industry and national security. And the three powers that it endows the president or bestows the president with is a power to direct and expand production and supplies as related to national security, a power to prioritize and allocate resources to ensure and enhance national defense, and the power to create and enter into contracts and agreements with private industry to make all that stuff happen. So when people start throwing around the National Defense Production Act, that's what it's designed to do, and these are the three powers that act by law bestows upon the president. It's not arbitrary. It's you know, it's very distinct and it's very well defined. And so presidents have used that. All presidents have used that. Eisenhower, Kennedy, Nixon, Johnson, you know, Carter. Every president has used it throughout time. Even Biden used it, I believe, to declare the need for solar panels. So, you know, bringing it to the forefront now is very, very important given the status of the declining issues confronting California. So that's what the DPA is all about.
Well, I really hope they don't have to do that. What do you think if we did get to that point? What do you think the response would be in California?
Well, we've already used it.
Right.
The president has already used it. Okay, he's already used Executive Order 14156. All right, which is disable, you know, which was at the direction of the president, take essential steps to expand domestic production and California petroleum production under the DPA. So we've already used it. What we know happens is lawsuits result of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, part of life. But I think given the status that we have and honestly the inability of the governor to either comprehend the situation, I'm going to give a lot of credit that he can't comprehend it.
Yeah.
And the inability of the legislature to address it and fix it.
Except for Stan.
And the fact that the producers are dying on the vine and the refineries have threatened to leave the state.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd probably say the president has good basis to come in and address it before it gets any worse.
Yeah, considering the ramifications, if they do decide to pull the plug, at that point it's probably be too late.
Yeah, I mean, as Michael tell you, I mean, he lived in these refineries, he worked in them for years and years and years, but I mean, it's not like, you know, turning on a switch in your house. You can't turn off
right
and turn on a refinery, okay? It takes weeks, if not months, to shut it down properly, and then it takes weeks, perhaps even a year, to bring it up safely, depending on what you took out and all the other stuff. So, you know, at this point, I think we've all established that California's in a very critical, you know, borderline desperate situation. And then I think the California voter has to reconsider where the money's being spent off of a gallon of gasoline. So these are some of the things that, you know, people are working on. Mm-hmm. Really smart people are working on.
Well, I think the actual oil production, I think we can get back, but if we don't have a way to refine it, it doesn't do us any good. Is that right?
Well, again, it's a holistic solution. You can't just pick the refineries. So if you bring up a refinery and you don't have in-state production, then you're back to importing a lot of oil to keep that refinery going, right?
Right.
And if you don't bring up the pipeline, then you're stuck with a lot of maritime. So, you know, the most logical place to start is with production. You got to start with production because it doesn't matter if you have refineries and you don't have production. They're screaming about that now. When you talk to the refineries and you listen to their calls with their analysts, the Wall Street guys, they're all saying, you know, our supplies are getting pretty thin. And I believe ExxonMobil came out with a statement on Friday saying it's very, very critical at this point. So you can have refineries, but if you don't have product going to them, you don't have a refinery. So, you got to start somewhere. The most logical place to start is with production, and once you have production, then you have something to work with. And as we said in December in one of our papers, you know, we said if you brought Sable up, you can move Sable oil south, and that's precisely what happened. And so we have that going to the southern refineries. Chevron took it. If you bring up the rest of the fields, okay, not only in Kern, but you're talking Ventura County, Monterey County, Kings County, Orange County, and Los Angeles County. You bring up those fields, then you're going to have a lot of oil going into the north-south pipeline. you have a different set of economics, and you might have oil going in. You certainly would direct at least 25,000 barrels a day of oil going into the M70 pipeline, which feeds the PBF refinery in Torrance. And you begin to have great stabilization and a one-for-one reduction on imports. If you were able to produce the recoverable oils in California and put them in the directed pipelines going to the directed refineries, you would reduce imports substantially.
Right.
Not by 3% or 20%. We're looking at an 80% drop in dependency on crude imports, and that would have a corresponding impact on jet fuel and gasoline production as well. But, you know, again, you're always going to have the issue of, you know, where do we start? You start with refineries? Well, fine. You can bring that refinery up. There's no fuel. There's no crude stock to go into it.
Right.
You bring the pipeline up. There's no crude to go into it. So the most logical place is the production part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just,
and with that crude oil going up like the
I'm sorry?
Good one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where everybody's concentrating their efforts right now, because you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, and once it slips over the bar, getting it back is that's a whole different project. So, Stan, what do you hate to even ask, but what are you hearing in the legislature? I mean, it's an election year. They're, you know, driving the state off the cliff. Any awareness at all? I'm guessing no. But
yeah, on the governor's race, they're saying that the environmental groups are backing Steyer so if the Becerra got elected, then at least we might have some relief, maybe hopefully from CARB, from all the pressure. But I want to kind of go back to a couple of things that you guys were talking about. And unfortunately, I beat on my colleagues all the time on the other side of the aisle about the high-speed rail.
Mm-hmm.
And their biggest concern is the reason they won't put any, nobody will raise any cane over it, is because big labor is supporting them, and they don't want to lose their support for big labor. So the California state legislature, because of the influence of big labor, will not do anything on the high-speed rail. It's that simple. Then you have the other culprit that you guys were talking about. We have these green... the state of California is being ruined by two things: big labor and the greenhouse gas agenda. And that's why we're in the predicament, because they want to, legislature wants to have CARB pass all these regs that inhibit oil and gas production. So if you took... we talk about Trump coming in. We could go back to EPA standards and operate like the rest of the refineries in the U.S. That would give them a lot more freedom to operate and a lot more fees from CARB. These greenhouse gas guys are just going to have to step, these green agenda guys are going to have to step aside. Too bad. And big labor let it fall where it may. I think big labor is in most of the refineries anyway, so I would think that they would be fighting to keep them. And fighting for the legislators to influence CARB, but they're not. So I feel like big labor is guilty on both sides. So anyway, that's from where I'm sitting. Those three things: big labor, a greenhouse gas agenda, and CARB are ruining the oil and gas production and refining in the state.
Yeah.
Any awareness on the legislators' side that maybe CARB has got gotten a little out of hand?
Oh, absolutely. I've had several meetings. In fact, they asked, I'm the guy on the right, they asked me to speak to the Democratic caucus about the oil and gas. They get it loud and clear, but there's no action.
Hmm. And from the governor's office, any acknowledgement that any of this is a problem? I don't know how much you
No, we're not. I don't hear much. You know, I hear little bits and pieces, but no. According to them and according to the Energy Commission, we have 3 months supply, and we shouldn't worry about anything, and everything's status quo, and everything is fine.
Yeah, don't look behind the curtain.
No, do not look there. All right, we have to.
Well, it's going to get really ugly because, you know, we have a situation where Newsom and Trump are not the best of buddies. And Newsom is trying to Trump-proof California.
Right.
So Trump steps in, it's going to be really, really ugly. And I think virtually all the Democrats running for governor want to do the same thing, want to get rid of those refineries. So it's going to get worse and worse and worse. And, like I say, the fourth largest economy in the world, we're in a bubble. And if they decide, you know, it's like jumping out of an airplane. Once you jump out of an airplane, you can't go back.
Right.
You know?
Right. If you forgot to shoot, it's basically too late.
That's right. Gravity wins.
Uh-huh. God, all the time. Isn't that wonderful? It's too bad we can't. Yeah, never mind. I'm going somewhere bad. Better take a quick break before I explore that analogy at scale. We'll be right back with our panel of experts. We are chatting about the California gas crisis that does affect the rest of the country, just in case you were thinking that didn't matter to you. Please go to gascrisis.org, read the letters from the refiners, and especially look at the paper we have highlighted that is their comprehensive analysis on this and how it affects national security. We will be right back. Yes. It isn't a game, though, but they're kind of treating it like that.
Yeah, just because they say it doesn't make it true.
What?
Nope. That's a fact.
Don't let that get out.
Nope.
So for people that are following this, who think a lot of this is tied to the Middle East, what would you guys tell them?
Well, look. 20 to 22% of the world's oil moves through the Strait of Hormuz, and the way it's linked is crude oil is a global market. It's a commodity. It's mm-hmm. one of the most beautiful pure markets you could have ever because it does work very hard to match supply and demand and reach equilibrium. So that's what we see. But again, even without the Iranian conflict, prices and gasoline prices in California were going to go up because you have significant regulatory pressure on the refiners. You have dwindling in-state production. You have a collapse of a pipeline. And then you add all the regulatory costs to the price of a gallon of gas. So, you know, Sacramento and Gabby and the gang can scream all they want about it's Trump's war, it's Trump's crisis, but the data will suggest something entirely different. And, you know, the other part of this is, you know, when the state says we have 6 weeks supply and don't worry, that doesn't reconcile with what the analysts are saying and what the oil companies themselves are saying. I mean, Exxon themselves came out and said, look, you know, probably in 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to hit the wall. That means you're going to have price increases, price spikes, considerable price spikes. And that was consistent with the model that Jamie Rector and I from Berkeley put together. We said, you know, it's going to be in June. We can't tell you exactly when, but it's going to be in June, and you could have some significant price spikes coming through here. So what the state is saying doesn't reconcile with what the independent analysts are saying on Wall Street and what the oil companies themselves are saying. So maybe the CEC and Gabby and the gang have a secret stash of gasoline and oil that we don't know about.
And the likelihood of that is zero.
Well, as Michael Reasel will tell you, he'll tell you all about the tank farms because we don't have any.
Yeah. I mean, they act like that they can just make all this stuff come out of thin air. Well, we all know that it's more complicated than that. And
I've said this, before when Valero went down, as we said, Valero, January, they actually pulled the plug. Press kept reporting April. No, January 31st, they pulled feed. 2 days later, your professor got thermal imaging report showing it was cold. It was down. And before February 28th, when that war started, our prices up here, Chico, Hamilton City, Northern California, were up between 70 or 90 cents a gallon, depending on which station you were at. So they were already on their way up because of Valero going down.
What's your guess?
One thing that legislators in California have to recognize is that, you know, yeah, we need crude oil, but crude oil is useless unless you can make it into something. And without the refineries, I don't care how much crude oil you have, California is not going to survive without it. And you're not going to survive without the refineries to make it into something useful.
Well, yeah, that's true. But you have to ask yourself, Ron, do they care?
I don't think they understand.
Well, I don't think they understand, but I also don't think they care. All right, because
everybody's running for governor, and you have people running for mayor and governor. No one's asking the questions. You know, I tell people I'm 100% in favor of getting rid of oil. What's your backup plan? There's no backup plan.
Well, I don't think Steve Hilton has said that. I don't think Steve said it. Yeah, I mean, I'm in pretty much contact with Steve a lot, his people.
Right.
I don't think Steve has said that. I think, Steve is in favor of eliminating cap and trade. He's in eliminating the low carbon fuel standard, rolling back the state excise tax, which is the highest in the country, and bringing the price of fuel down there, and then working to increase production. But again, the refinery point that you bring up is absolutely correct, but where do you start? You can't start with the refinery and work backwards. You have to start with production and work forwards. And so the strategy now is, unless it's changed in the last 24 hours, is work with increasing in-state production, and we'll figure out, once we get the production going, we'll figure everything else out.
We have talked about the whole Nevada and Arizona issue before, but then we kind of move on. What is their, they've got to be in a panic. They're like trapped in the back seat of the car. They can't even get to the wheel. They don't even get to vote for somebody better.
Well, Arizona is better off than Nevada, okay? Because Arizona has a major pipeline going into the state from Texas. And so we're about 38% of their fuel coming from California. So, they're a lot better off than we are.
And they've got refineries? They've got refineries to take care of that oil?
No, they pumped in their fuel.
Pumping in jet fuel, gasoline, diesel from El Paso to Mexico. Yeah, not crude oil,
getting,
fuel.
Then they're getting 40%, 38% from us. The state that's the most vulnerable, absolutely screwed, is Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
They have one refinery which makes asphalt. They have two pipelines that come in from California that essentially are operating at lower capacity today, a pipeline coming in from Washington and a pipeline coming in from Utah. So they are entirely dependent on feeds from other states, but irrespective of what's coming in from Washington and Utah, that's about 12% of their fuel supplies. 88% come from California. And Governor Lombardo has sent several letters, I know, to Governor Newsom. The last one was, gee, thanks a lot. Your people are courteous. They're kind. They're talking to us. But we're still very vulnerable to what you're doing. And I suspect that after the three letters from the refiners came out and went to Governor Lombardo in Nevada, he was losing a lot of sleep at night. So, you know, we call this the California contagion effect because it affects the neighboring states of California.
That's the one thing that you're not supposed to want to be is a contagion, right? That's usually a bad thing, right?
So what's kept California prices moderate? You know, I mean, they've gone up, and again, I'm paying seven. So the three stations that I trade at, 719, 709, and 729 for premium fuel. That was yesterday. But what's kept California prices from going any higher has been actually President Trump. He's done two actions. He suspended the Jones Act, which allows now non-U.S. flag tankers to deliver fuel to California, and which a lot of us didn't count on, is he allocated oil from the United States Strategic Petroleum Reserve to California refineries. We hadn't seen that one coming. We weren't sure whether that was going to be done or not, but he did it. And so those actions by themselves have really, really helped the prices in California. He isn't getting credit for it, but those prices have helped a lot in California. So the release of the oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve has honestly, you know, kept some of these refiners in business.
Well,
because we lost so much crude oil, because we lost so much crude oil that was imported, including 30% from the Middle East.
Yeah, 31% of the oil, 29% came from the Middle East. A lot of it was, some of that has been replaced by oil from South America, of course. But the Middle Eastern oil was, you know, gone down to a trickle. And then, you know, California has to now bid against countries like Australia and New Zealand for oil and gasoline. So,
well,
California policies, you know, we've advocated the control of the state to foreign players.
Yeah.
It's that simple. And I a lot of us sort of sit back and go, well, what part of this don't you understand, Governor Newsom? And oh, by the way, I mean, it's going to sound probably not very nice, but I did offer to pay at my own expense for Governor Newsom to take a class in economics at one of our fine community colleges. He's taking me up on the offer.
Okay, that's fantastic.
But, I'd be happy to pay for that class. Now, and, not that I think would do any good. But, you know, these aren't issues that can, you know, that you conveniently talk about in the context of climate change. These are issues that need to be talked about in the context of national security, force readiness, the economy, and, of course, hardworking Californians. You know, people that are taking on two or three jobs, people who are on fixed income, people who are the senior citizens, they get hit hard over this. And as I said in one of my discussions with the legislator, I said, you know, I showed up to take the bullet train to San Francisco, but there isn't any. So, you know, I flew.
Yeah.
I went down to the station.
I'm here.
I've arrived. You know, where's my $35 billion?
Right, it was supposed to be complete by now, right? And,
yes.
You know, it doesn't exist. And as Stan said, it will continue to be the train that's never finished because, you know, big construction is controlling that process right now.
Yeah. It has kind of...
Kind of on that note... Yeah. Aaron, kind of on that note, yeah. Some of those big overpasses that you see driving down to the Central Valley, they haven't been engineered correctly, and they're sinking into the ground 3 feet, and they have to rebuild them.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
So it isn't even the Winchester Mystery Train, because even that house is still standing. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
So it really is just high-cost rail.
Yeah, and if that's if that's the case,
unbelievable.
Right? Then who's accountable for that?
Right.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, there was millions of dollars spent on that, and there ought to be some kind of repercussions. I mean, if it's all got to be redone. I guess we just get our wallet out and pay for that, too.
Yep. Hey, Stan, just out of curiosity, are there, I mean, you guys have caucuses and all these things, so is there one about anything about high-cost rail? Like, or is that just kind of a foregone conclusion? We're going to have it, and we're just going to keep spending?
It's a foregone conclusion that the left is going to continue to support it because of big labor. End of story.
Okay. And climate change, right? I think that's the fig leaf, right?
Yeah.
Well, hasn't the federal government withdrawn their funds from that project?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I can't remember if it was $8 billion or something, but they pulled their money back.
I think it was $5 billion or something like that. Well, it was a big number.
Yeah.
And the secretary withdrew the funding. I mean, there was a... They did a large and independent audit report of it, and I'll find it and send it out. But it was an amazing report, okay, of just the malfeasance that was involved with this thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you take that much funding away from a project and they just press forward with it? Where are they going to get the money to complete it?
Yeah, and it's already a complete failure.
Us.
Yeah. I guess people aren't tuned in.
There is one way to fix it. There is one way to fix it. The way you fix the fuel shortage and the green agenda and the high-speed rail is you elect some Republicans. We'll fix it.
Yeah, there you go.
People ask me, how do you fix these problems in California? And I said, vote red and get your checkbook out. Quit whining about it. The simple fact is that the Democrats are outspending us and outvoting us, and it's time to change it. And the only way you're going to change it is write a check. Sorry.
Well, weren't they going to do an audit of the high-speed rail and find out where all the money's going? And I think they were kind of implicating there was some fraud involved.
Well, they did that. So I just posted the link for everybody to take a look at.
Wow.
So all their expenditures to this point have been legitimate?
I suspect that's who you... It depends on who you ask, right?
No, that's true.
Yeah, which end of the check you're on.
Well, fellas, it turns out The Who wrote a song about the high-speed rail years ago. They were prophets and seers, and they came up with the perfect song for it. And we'll play that for you right now and then come right back and finish off the hour with our panel experts. We're chatting about the gas situation, and we have... of course, had to speak about the high-cost rail because, well, begs discussion. With an election in the offing in 2 days, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio.
of reality. I'm free. I'm free. And I'm waiting for you to follow me.
See by your eyes, you must be lying. When you think I don't have a clue, baby, you're crazy. If you think that you can fool me, because I've seen that movie too.
Yes, everybody's a visionary. Take all the old music, play it against the backdrop of today, and it's like, wow, that isn't what we thought that meant. So in our last little bit here, I know we have referenced the election multiple times, but what do you think if people in California do vote in more Democrats to run the executive branch? Any changes in the offing, or more of same?
Well, I think Stan's probably in the best position to comment on that, right, Stan?
Yeah, you're talking about Democrats, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, because I'm sure.
Well, then we're done.
I'm sure it happens everywhere, right? But I hear from all these people, oh, I'm going to vote for, you know, Captain Obscurity, who doesn't have a prayer's chance in hell because he's a wonderful person. And I'm like, oh, stop it. How about let's vote for somebody who can get on the ballot in November? How about that? That'd be a good idea.
Here's the problem. I've said it before. The large metropolitan areas have the major constituency by volume. Mm-hmm. Therefore, they have, you know, most of the legislature, and most of the legislature is blue. And when you, a lot of those folks in those bigger cities think that electricity comes from the wall socket and water comes from the water spout and groceries come from the grocery store and gas comes from the gas station. And they have no idea about all that big, dirty infrastructure that makes their life great. You know, we're out there in the oil field working on drilling rigs, and we're in these refineries turning wrenches, and we're out in the fields, you know, raising grapes and food for the grocery stores, and that takes energy. It might, Professor Mish said it best, it takes the first 8% of our economy is oil and gas. None of this other stuff would happen. You couldn't power all of our water infrastructure without natural gas and electricity. You can't power all of our trucks moving up and down the highway without diesel. You can't get from city to city without jet fuel. So they're disillusioned at best, because they think, well, we want clean air, and we want clean water, and we want perfect. Did you know? I'm sorry, I'm ranting here.
But we like it.
Did you know? We hear all of this CO2 sequestration. CO2 sequestration. Let's spend billions and billions of dollars on CO. Did you know? If you took every bit of CO2 sequestration in the world, it amounts to point. Hear this. 0.0001% of the CO2 in the world. It is the biggest joke we've ever had in our life. But the greenies think, oh, it's great.
Yeah.
But they're not doing anything. It's just no different than Professor Mish said. These ships bring in 4.5 weeks putting polynuclear aromatics into the atmosphere, then they get 12 miles out and they kick over to low sulfur diesel. It's hypocrisy at its best. But they just, unless we get Republicans in, we're done.
Yeah, and I think that
another solution is this movement toward EVs. Because California, we're a big state. We got 400,000 miles of roadway, and fuel taxes, which we've been talking about extensively, raises close to $9 billion, which is used to maintain those 400,000 miles of roadway. So now the big push in California is everybody's going to drive an EV. Well, EVs are heavier, so they're going to tear up the road more. And EVs pay no fuel taxes because they're not using fuel. And so we're going to be tearing up the roads, and the $9 billion we have right now is going to be diminishing to something less. And so we're going to be faced with mileage tax or higher electricity rates to basically maintain those 400,000 miles of roadway. So that's just another issue that is not being addressed with the change to go to net zero.
Well, that's a real good point that you just brought up, because you have to drive an electric car 122,000 miles before it becomes carbon neutral. If you take all the polymers and copolymers from the plastic that are oil-derived, oil derivatives, if you take the styrene, butyrene that are in the tires that's oil-derived, you can take the forging of the wheels that are energy-intensive from natural gas. Give me a break, folks. 122,000 miles before it's carbon neutral, it's a joke.
Yeah.
And then that CO2 sequestration you were talking about, Stan, you know, that was the biggest, I'm pretty convinced that was the biggest root of their damn fine they slapped on Valero, because the hydrogen unit generates hydrogen and CO2.
Yeah. The real,
you know, that's what that was all about.
The real person,
one
for
you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the EV is 100% made with oil. All the pieces, parts, the wires, the insulation, the tires, everything that's not, you know, it's not being driven by gasoline. That's the only thing they're eliminating is gasoline. But it's 100% made with oil, except it doesn't need gasoline.
There is one solution, a good, quick, easy solution to CO2 sequestration. Plant more crops, which means more water infrastructure. Guess what? Get rid of the high-speed rail. Put your money into water infrastructure, you greenies, and you'd have all of the CO2 sequestration you needed just by natural agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd need fuel to run tractors for agriculture, so...
Sure do.
We're busy making that a problem.
Yeah.
Well, Mike,
yeah, they know.
Ariza's a farmer. I mean, he'll tell you how much diesel... Mike, what do you run those water pumps with?
Mine's run with electricity, but there's a lot. Most of the ones out in Cape, where our farm is, they're ran by diesel.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
Well, all of our, I own a pistachio orchard, and all of our equipment is run by diesel. We have tractors and disking and spraying and harvesting. Everything's diesel.
Yeah, you go back to the Midwest and look at some of those giant farms they have back there. They're all farmed with diesel. I mean,
yep.
If you don't have diesel, your food supply is going to evaporate.
Yep. Logistically, it will collapse, especially if we lose all these refineries. The port of L.A. will likely go down. I mean, that's the biggest food importing port in the country, and it stretches into the country.
Mm-hmm.
You lose the diesel for that, it doesn't run. You don't get your food in the grocery stores, you lose your diesel, you lose your logistics. Cities have 3 to 5 days of the supply. Yes, sir.
Mike, do U.S. refineries make bunker number 6?
They make what?
Number 6 fuel oil bunker.
Some of them do. Every now and then we will. When we were in a partial refinery shutdown, we would make. Because we had all the heavier oils that we couldn't run to the units because they were down, we would make bunker out of it.
When these ships come in from, like, India, and they're burning number 6 oil, do they replenish in the L.A. port and the Bay Area ports?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, where do they get their fuel when they want to refuel on the way back? Do they get that number 6 from us?
Yeah.
Well, sure.
Well, there you go.
I would think they do. Yeah,
more
I don't know absolutely for sure, but I would think they do. Ron knows.
Yeah,
you know, if they come in, they got to get fuel to go back out.
Yeah.
So
right. Right. Their tanks aren't that big. Yeah, exactly.
Hypocrisy at its best, folks. Hypocrisy at its best.
Yeah, the more you learn, the more you shake your head. Why can't anybody figure this out? It's so basic. The pieces themselves. Yeah, it's a pretty simple process.
So, you know, I jokingly refer to people that you can't bring a logical question into this conversation.
Right. So do you think California is still, I shouldn't say California, I should say Sacramento, is still hanging their hat on the idea that California will ultimately be an all-electric state? Is that what's driving all this?
Well, there's these underlying tones that we are going to have an oil and gas crunch, but they're still, all they do is when I see letters from the CEC to the governor or from the caucuses to the governor, it's all pandering about, we've done a great job headed to our destination of zero emissions and we'll continue to move in that direction. However, we may have to get a little more production and help the refineries a little bit until we get there. So their plan, I'm telling you, their plan is still 100% all green. No emissions.
Take them out.
Yeah.
Take them out. Yep.
We had a zero emission society in the 1800s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no. That force is part of methane now. Don't watch it there now.
Okay.
Yeah, don't try to make any sense.
Yep, we'll have to bring back the trusty steed.
The Irish were right. Just put Guinness in our cars and ride a horse, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. And so, what's, I mean, I realize this changes all the time, but what do you guys think the timeline is now, since we're here at the last day of the last AMA?
I was wrong. I thought it would be this week, but I was wrong. I think, Professor, you guys have probably a better handle on it than I do.
Well, if Trump doesn't step in, I don't see it changing.
Well, I mean, the supply situation will most likely deteriorate, and I think that's what Stan was referring to.
Mm-hmm.
And then prices will go up, probably considerably or potentially considerably. Even if everything ended today, and all of a sudden you could let all the ships into the Straits of Hormuz and everything went sort of back to normal, you're 60 days before that actually has an impact at the pump for the consumer in California.
Mm-hmm.
That's how long it takes. Now, on July 1st, state excise tax is going to go up. We have some potential increases in the low carbon fuel standard. We have a potential increase as a result of the recent cap and trade, cap and investment adjustments. So those are going to go up, irrespective of whatever happens in Iran.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those need to be carefully considered by the voters. But Stan's right. You got to do, you know, if you're tired of this and you're tired of the shenanigans, then you got to do two things. You got to vote, and you got to bring out your checkbook, and you got to bring in people like Steve Hilton. I personally know Steve. He's one of the. He's completely focused. He's super, super smart, and he's a guy that's dedicated to trying to fix the state. So, you know, you got to take a serious look at these people.
Yeah,
and
put somebody at the helm who's actually run some things before, and been successful.
And just not bite into the poison apple again of, oh, climate change and these are bad people and blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
Take a look at Pacific Palisades and ask yourself, I was just there 2 weeks ago, and it looks like Dresden after a bombing.
It looks like our fire areas up here that we experience on a regular basis. Uh-oh, fellas, we're out of time. It's happened again.
You know, why were the... Yeah. Why were the reservoirs drained? Why was there enough pressure in the in the fire hoses, in the pipelines, in the hydrants?
Because that would have made sense to have water in there. Guys, yeah. We will do this again, I am sure. So. All of you, we really appreciate it. I hope people go on here and look at the archive. It is May 31st, 2026. You can go to gascrisis.org and get all the shows we've done on this topic. Thank you so much.
Look for the bare necessities, simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the necessities, Mother Nature's recipe. Bring the bare necessities of life. Wherever I wander, wherever I roam.